everyone and welcome to our Sunday Shir. I see the room expanded a little bit since last time, so hopefully I'll be able to speak loud enough that everyone should hear me. The topic of today's Shir is based on an idea that we find in the parasha yesterday. We know the story, the tragic story of Dinah being abducted by Shem. And in turn, we find that the sons of Yaakov Avinu, Shimon and Levi, in effect, took the law into their own hands. They went ahead and they killed out the city of Shem. It was a controversial thing to do. Yaakov Avinu did not agree with them. Different reasons given what exactly the point of contention was. But nevertheless, they did not wait for justice to be enforced in the city, or they held that justice would not be enforced in the city, and therefore they went ahead and took matters into their own hands. And with that in mind, I thought it would be worthwhile considering how that would be for us. How does it play out in halacha, the idea of taking the law into your own hands? Is the person able to go ahead and in effect do what needs to be done without going to a bezdin? Now, before we go any further, I would just like to announce that today's shir is being dedicated by Reverend Mrs. Moshe Berger, commemorating the shloshim of Mrs. Berger's mother, Gita Bas David, as well as the 15th yahrzeit of Rabbi Berger's mother, Bava Miriam Bas Shmuel. Some should have an aliyah. All right. So we have the precedent that we find in the Shas for this concept is the Gemara that's found in the Sefer Bava Kama. The Gemara is found at the beginning of the third paragraph of Bava Kama. I would just like to read the Gemara. I noticed that I don't have the Kama. Okay. Thank you. We have here the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara on the Klav Zayin on the day states as follows. The Gemara says we're going to pick it up from about two. It's on the first sheet, 2, 4, 5 lines down. The Gemara says, "Ahugar Gusa de Betray." There was a well that belonged to two people. The Kol Yoma have a Dolich Adminayu. That in each it was a partnership arrangement of a well. They needed the well to irrigate the field, and each one had his own field that he needed to irrigate. And they shared a well, and they shared the well on a rotating basis. So on Sunday, Reuven would use it. On Monday, Shimon. Tuesday would be Reuven again. Wednesday would be Shimon, etc. So the Gemara says that that on one particular day, Yom Echad, Yom Ahavis, that on a particular day, Chol Yom Ahavis, Dolei Chad Minayu, on each day, one person would draw water. Asi Chad, Kazoli, B'Yom Adolei Dilei. So the Gemara says that it happened that on one particular day, somebody used the well. It was not his day. Okay, so let's just sign names. The Reuven, it was not his day. The Reuven was using the well. Amalei, so Shimon came out and approached him and said, Yom Adidi, who? That this is my day. You have no right to use the well. You're hurting me by taking the water. I need the water. So the Gemara says, Lo'ashkafe, he did not pay any attention to him. Shako panda demara machir. So he took the tools that he was using, a shovel, whatever it may have been, and he hit him with this thing to get a little violent, to get him off of the property. In other words, I guess he tried using all other means of logic and reason, and the person was not receptive. So he basically took the law into his own hands. He did not go to Bezdin to go get a court order, an injunction to get this fellow to stop using the well, but rather, he basically physically threw him off the land. So the Gemara said, and now the question was that in the course of doing this, he actually caused some sort of embarrassment or injury to Reuven. So the Gemara says that the question was asked to a Rav, does he have to compensate the Shimon who hit Reuven? Have to compensate him for this. Says the Gemara, on their way, so the response was given, Mea Pandi de Pandala Michia. The Gemara says he could have said that the Rav said that this was Rav Chista, Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said that, quite frankly, he could have hit him as many times as he needed to get him off the property. Because a few Amanda Omar will have it in his Dina Lenafshe. Because even according to the opinion that says that a person is not allowed to take the law into his own hands, which we'll see in a minute, Okay, but nevertheless, the makom seder of it in a shina lenashe. But when it comes to a case of a loss, a person is allowed to take the law into his own hands. The itmar, because we learned, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, law of it in a shina lenashe, a person cannot take the law into his own hands. Rabbi Nachman says a person can. And the Gemara proceeds to say that in a case of a loss, everybody agrees that he could take the law into his own hands. So I'm skipping a few lines. Kipligi says to Gemara, when would there be an issue? He said the lack of seder, only in a case where there would be no loss by waiting. Rabbi Yehuda Amar lo avid in ashtina lenashe. So in that situation, Rabbi Yehuda says that it would not affect you to wait. In other words, in the case of a well, so had Shimon waited to get a sock from Basin, it would have, by the time that would have happened, he would have, all the water from the well would have been used, and he would not have been able to take care of his property. So therefore, he could not wait. So in that situation, the Gemara says he has a right to take the law into his own hands. He didn't have to wait, because waiting is going to cause him a loss. And therefore, he could take the law into his own hands, and even if need be, he could go ahead and use physical force to remove the person from his property. The only time, says the Gemara, there's an issue would be in a case where there would be no loss by waiting. In a different scenario, it's not going to make a difference. If you wait, you'll get to the Beis Din, you'll get a court order, and it won't affect you. Do you have to wait, or can you take the law into your own hands? Says the Gemara, by this we have a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, well, of it in Ishtinu and Ashe. So Rabbi Yehuda says you cannot take the law into your own hands in that scenario. Why? The kivan the lek of seida leil kami dina. Because since it's not going to affect him, he's not going to lose anything by waiting. So let him go to court. Whereas Rav Nachman Amar of it in Ishtinu and Ashe. Rav Nachman says, and this is the halacha, that a person, even in a case of no loss, would be allowed to take the law into his own hands. Why? The kivan to the din of his lo tarach, because since he is doing what is according to the law, so therefore he's not obligated to bother to go to court. What do you have to go to court for? I'm doing exactly what they'll do. I'm going to do the same thing that they're going to do, so why should I bother going to court? This is what Rav Nachman says, and to make a long story short, although it's still going to be a long story, but to make this part of the long story short, this is the halacha. This is the halacha. The halacha is, so in other words, in the case of the well, where the person by waiting is going to incur a loss, so the Gemara says there is no dispute, the person can take the law into his own hands. Does not have to wait to go to bed. Okay, the only time there would be an issue would be in a scenario where the person could, if he waited, it wouldn't affect him, it wouldn't hurt him to wait. He's not going to lose, in the long run, he's not going to lose anything. In that situation, there is a dispute, but nevertheless, we hold the halacha that even in such a case, a person is allowed to take the law into his own hands. Okay, so if we stop right here, it would sound, okay, terrific. So you could, therefore, if, you know, the situations arise, where there's legal issues involved, all kinds of different scenarios that come up, a person involved in a potential property dispute or whatever. So the halacha would sound like you could always take the law into your own hands. Now clearly, if that was true in every case, then it would be unsafe to walk in the street because of the fact that everybody would be, you know, a guy would, you'd be walking down the street and a guy would come over and say, hey, that shirt that you're wearing, that thing that you have in your hand is mine, and rip it out of your hand. Or a person would stop you at a red light and say, that's my car, get out of here, and take the car, right? So the question is, so when exactly does this apply, and when does the guy, they do that anyway, but they're not claiming to be representing the law. Right, so now the you know, then you have the other type of people I know coming from having grown up in New York. So the wonderful attitude that prevails among the citizens of that city. That one time I had an experience that I was at night and I had to go into a certain home on a dark street, and I did not realize that it was my fault. I didn't realize that I parked my car and I blocked someone's driveway. So when I came out a while later, there was a note on the windshield of my car that said that the truth is, this fellow said, I was about to slash your tire. However, being that we're all God's children, I decided to give you a second chance. Okay? So, stop it. But the question is, was he, you know, in other words, but let's say you had a non-sodic. Would say, well, if you're blocking my driveway, that's it, I'll slash your tires, or at the very least, I'll let the air out of your tire. Right? What's that?
That's a baseball bat before,
right? Those types of situations. Right? So, you blocked my drive, you parked in the biggest chutzpah of all, you parked in my parking space. Well, what kind of thing is that to do? And therefore, once you walk away, I won't damage you, I'll let the air out of these tires, it won't be a total damage, you just get them filled up, there'll be a lot of aggravation. I'm taking the law into my own hands. So obviously you'll say that case is not relevant because that's not the law. That's not called taking the law into your own hands. Taking the law into your own hands is when it's the law. If it's not the law, then just because you want to get back at somebody does not mean that you can take the law into your own hands. So here I'd like to discuss just an overview of this idea. We have had always throughout probably the history of the world, certainly in our time, situations with the Landes, where people, you know, go around and do all kinds of things and in a very aggressive manner. And they get very often a lot of sympathy. A lot of people, and maybe they're right. Maybe they're right. So the question is, what can you do? What can't you do? Now, I would just like to say it's a very big topic, and I in no way can claim to be covering all of it, or even to say that it's what I'm about to say is 100% authoritative. And if it came up, a person would be wise to ask a shiloh to a rub. But I'd like to go over the basic parameters of this concept and see how they apply and when they apply. Okay, so first and foremost, you know, a situation which unfortunately in our times is relevant to people in terms of protecting their own property. So this crime, unfortunately, we deal with it in this community and other places, with the concern about the break-ins, home invasions, and things like that. So in a situation where a person comes into the chalila, a person would enter into someone else's house, a criminal. So by the law of the Torah, the truth of the matter is, by the law of the Torah, such a person is called a bava machteret. Such a person is called that he broke, a person who breaks into a home. And the halacha is, if you turn to page 2, the halacha in the Rambam here is, referred also as well in the Shulchan Aruch, that in the Rambam, this is in Hilchos Kenevos, Perek Zayin, Halacha Zayin, Habava Machteres, Bain Beyond Bain Belaila, Engel Dorman. Okay? If a person breaks into someone else's home and the homeowner is there and in the struggle that ensues, kills the perpetrator, he kills the criminal, the ganis, so the halacha is he's not liable. Right? Elam Hargo Bain Abayas, Oshar Azam Turim. Okay, that if he came down to it, the person would be allowed to kill the invader. Okay, and the Rambam goes further. Shuk Yeshul Chol Lahargo, Bain Bechol, Bain Beshabbat, Bechol Misa Shichon Lamisa. The halach is very strict over here that the person can kill the invader even on Shabbat, and it doesn't have to be the homeowner himself. If it was someone else who was there, if it was necessary, it would be permitted. Okay, and the reason why this is, if you skip down to the test, the Rambam says, "Mufnei tira Torah dama shel ganav." This is derived from a pasuk because it says in Parshas Mishpatim, "Ein lo domin," that there is no, that in such a case, if the person is murdered, is killed, there is no recourse. So why is that? So the Rambam says that. Now you'll ask, why should that be the case? The guy, after all, only came in to steal. So if he came in to steal and he's just trying to simply take property, he's trying to take monetary items, why do you have the right to take his life? So the Rambam says that the Torah's view on this is that even though Avdi Shabbal is a mammon, you're allowed to kill him with Isha Cheskoso, Shiyam Amad Balabai Safana Umago, that Umano, that if, because the presumption is that if the Balabai, if the homeowner would put up a fight, Yahargenu, the criminal would kill him. So therefore, the nimsa zeha nichnas l'beis chaver, we know that therefore it comes out that the person who breaks into the home is kerodes acha chavero l'hargo. It's considered, it has the law of a rodes. It's considered like he's chasing after the, he's coming to kill, even though he's not. If you would ask him, why are you breaking into this house? He said, I'm not coming to kill anybody, I'm coming to steal. But nevertheless, if the homeowner would put up a fight, so the Torah was yored, the Torah went to the psychology of a person, that in such a situation, the guy might even kill rather than, you know, be subdued. And therefore, it's considered a rodes, a person would be allowed to kill him. Now, that means, essentially, that if a person breaks into Khalilah, should it never happen to anyone, but if it would happen such a thing and they had the ability to stop him, so you have to stop him. Now, like by any other roday, the law is that you're only allowed to kill such a person in a situation where there is no other way. If there is a way, if there is another way to do it, then the person is not allowed to kill a rodent. If the Yochel Ahatul Be'echad Me'evarav, if there's a way to stop him without actually taking his life, if you can injure him in such a way that he will be, you know, incapacitated, he won't be able to continue, so then that's what a person would need to do. But if it came down to it, this is the halacha. And how this stacks up in the American law, anyone who knows, probably the same. I imagine it's probably the same thing. Right there.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
The option of doing nothing.
The option of doing nothing. Well, I don't know.
If I challenge him, he'll kill me. But
well,
maybe I'm a slave to learn.
Well, that's a different discussion. That's a good point, because very often it's not wise to challenge the person, because an upstanding person versus a criminal probably doesn't have a chance. You know, as one Ghanif, I believe, who was caught in this neighborhood, said that, you know, if you want to shoot me, you can shoot me, but you're only going to get one chance, because after that, I'm shooting back. You know, so therefore, you know, the wisdom of such a thing, I'm not discussing.
Why is he a rogue?
Because it's natural. I assume the reason is because it's natural for a person to not just stand by and allow himself to be violated. It's natural for a person to put up a fight. In other words, someone breaks into your house to just sit back and say, all right, do what you want. I mean, I think it probably would be wise to do that. No, we should never know from such a thing, but it would probably be wise to do that, because generally speaking, you can't compete with a criminal in criminal activity. But the fact of the matter is that, I guess the human nature is that a person will put up a fight, and if he puts up a fight, his life is now in jeopardy, because the Ghanif may kill him. That's what I assume. But all right, I'm just saying, we're just taking the extreme of the halacha. Nobody should ever know from this. This is taken to the extreme. Okay, now, the question would come up, so let's say I don't want to do that. Okay, I don't want to do that because it's not wise, and very, very risky. But instead, I'm going to take other measures to protect my house. For example, I'm going to put landmines around the entrance to my window. Right? So therefore, and if anyone will attempt to break into my house, so that's it. You know, that'll be the end. Right? Or any other such idea. In other words, I'll put, or a different idea, a little bit more down to earth, would be I will have an attack dog in my house that's ready to kill. That and you know, the dog is trained to know, you know, the people in the family, so that he's not going to come after any of myself or any of my children. I'm sorry?
Indoors, not outdoors.
Right, no. So outdoors, we can try the mines, you know, and you know, if that doesn't work, so then you can always have as a backup plan, you can have a killer dog ready, just, you know, ready to make a move. So what would be the halakha in such a case? Now, this already is, you know, as far as the dogs and so forth, this already is something that I think people do take into consideration. Then people do try such things. So it happens to be that this is also not so simple. It's not so simple to do such a thing for the following reason. Because the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Bava Kamis on the second sheet, the first side, there's a very small piece of Gemara which is actually brought in the Shulchan Aruch, and it creates a shaila that we're not always aware of. And the Gemara says as follows, the Tanya, Rav Nosson Omer, in the very, very small paragraph on the right-hand side. It says, the Tanya, Rabbi Nosson Omer, Minayim Shelo Yigadol Adam Kelev Rav Besot Beso. How do we know that a person should not raise a bad dog? A bad dog means a dangerous dog in his house. Ba'al yamo su'am ru'ua b'soch beiso. And a person as well should not have a faulty ladder in his house. How do we know that a person shouldn't do this? Says the Gemara, Talmud Lomar, will sustain dom in the Beisecha. Because when the Torah teaches us the mitzvah of masa, the mitzvah of making a fence around the roof of a person's property, so the Torah says, well, sustain dom in the Beisecha, there should not be blood in your house. So the, what does it mean there shouldn't be blood in your house? So the Gemara interprets, the Chazal interprets that to mean that there shouldn't be blood in your house, meaning that you should not have dangerous things in your house. Now, simply stated, you'll say, well, that's because they could pose a danger to myself and my family. But the Marsha, in his commentary to this Gemara, which is not on the sheet, the Marsha comes along and says that if that's the case, so then we know this already from the mitzvah of Makkah. The mitzvah of Makkah, in and of itself, the mitzvah in the Torah to build a fence around your roof, teaches us that you have to protect yourself. So what is the Torah adding by saying, well, sasim damim b'beisecha, that you should not have a bad dog on your property. You should not have a dangerous dog on your property. So the apparent answer to that is, says the Marsha, that this is teaching us that even if it does not pose a danger to your own family, meaning that even if you say, well, my dog is trained, so my dog is trained, I have a killer dog, but he knows everyone in the family very well. He, in fact, he comes over and plays with them, and he's very tame, very calm, and is only going to be there in case of a need. So the Mashal says that what the Gemara here is saying is that even in such a case, it's not so simple, because of the fact that there's always the chance that the dog may break out of its habit and attack someone, Khalil attack someone in the house. And therefore, in that type of situation, says the Marsha, this is what the Gemara is telling us, that a person should not have dangerous things lying around the house. Because even if you say, well, it's for the crook, but you never know, because it could end up harming someone in the household. And therefore you say, well, I put, you know, using the example, I put mines around the outside of my property, and everyone in my family knows not to go there. It's only going to be someone tries to break in the window or whatever. But you never know. Somebody could forget, and somebody could go there. So therefore, this is a halacha that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that in the very last simon of Kol Shel Mishpat, this is not on the sheet, but it's discussed here in the laws of damages in Shmiras HaNefesh. It says that a person should not do that. So therefore, I'm not saying this halacha l'maisa, because it could be that today there are ways to do it. I don't know that you can guarantee that it would never cause any harm to your own family. I don't know if that's so. But this is what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. I'm just alerting to the fact that there is a shaila in such a case. Yes?
I don't know something else. You're not allowed to have a bad dog.
I have a dog that's going to scare people from knocking on the door. Yeah, all right, but that's a different discussion. But this is a halacha that's brought down that the Chachamim prohibited such a thing because of the fact that it could lead to problems. Okay, and even though you say, well, I know that it's not going to hurt me, but you never know for sure. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says, it's not on the sheet, Chen kol michshol sheyesh bo sakonos nefashos, mitzvah tasei lahasiro. Okay, that if there's anything dangerous in a person's house, the person has to remove it. Okay, and to warn everyone very well. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes the pasuk, and it says that if a person doesn't do this, so then they're violating the pasuk that says, "Losasim damim v'zecha." A loaded gun in today's world, a common thing, may also be. I'm not saying mutter or usher, but it's not pashut that it's mutter. It's not such a simple thing, because unless it's well guarded, unless a person is legal to have a gun, okay, a person wants to do that, I'm not getting involved. This is a political issue, so I'm not going to get involved with. But one thing is for sure, you do hear from time to time stories in the news that a kid, a member of the family, found a gun lying around, and a terrible tragedy took place. The halacha is concerned about that. That's what the pasuk says. So therefore, you have to be very careful. So the same thing, if a person says, I'm going to have a guard dog or something like that that's going to, you know, pounce on whoever comes to the door, you just never know. So that, it's at least a shiloh. So as far as having that as a recourse, it's not so simple. I'm sorry, a question? But now I will tell you that I dug up, the question was there, so I'll read you the question. This is from the Institute of Business Halacha, that the question, here's the shiloh. It says, twice in a period of 6 months, burglars have broken into the apartment of someone who lives on the top floor of an apartment building. The person who lives there has figured out that the method of breaking in is by going onto the roof of the building and lowering themselves onto metal poles protruding from the porch. In other words, that on this, there were poles that were protruding, and it says here that the reason why they had those poles, common in Israel, they have such things, that for the purpose of hanging out the laundry. They had like laundry poles that were, and the garment would go up to the top, lower himself down the laundry pole onto the balcony, and then break into the house. So the fellow whose house was twice burglarized finally caught on to this. So he said, so what did he do? So he loosened the metal poles and left them lightly connected. Okay, so sure enough, after a month, the burglar returned and tried to lower himself onto these poles, only to crash down to the ground and severely injure himself. Okay, I guess you said it's a nice story. But the shaila is, but now, as only in the chutzpah that only, I shouldn't say, but only a Jew could have, right? So now the guy took him to Besdin and said, pay me for my injury. Do I have to, is he obligated to pay or not? Is he obligated to compensate or not? So the answer was given, this Institute of Halacha gave the psak, I don't know if it came to them, or they were aware, the shaila, the psak was given that he's not liable. So then they turned around and asked, but what about this halacha? What about the halacha that you're not allowed to have dangerous things in your house? Right? So he went ahead and loosened the poles. So how is that permitted? So they reconciled by saying that first of all, even if it's true that it was usher for him to do it, even if the guy had no right to loosen the pole, but at the end of the day, that would not make him chayav. That would just mean that he was violating the law in the Torah, that the Torah says, well, trust and done in the Zeitzepah, that you should not create danger in your home. But that still doesn't mean, the fact of the matter is that the halacha essentially states that if you go onto someone else's property without rishus, without permission, anything that happens, the owner of that property is exempt from. So therefore, you know, if a person goes into someone's backyard and the guy has a dog and he gets bitten by the dog, he's not chayav to pay. He's not chayav to pay because of the fact that he could say, what'd you come here for? I didn't tell you to come here. Right? This is clearly stated in the Gemara in Bava Kama, that's why I'm a Gimel Amid Aleph, that if a person goes into someone's property without permission and gets damaged, the owner of the property is not liable. Is not liable because he can say to him that you shouldn't have come here, you had no permission. Okay, now if the mailman, the classical thing that the mailman is being chased by the dog, so then that's different because the mailman has the right, I imagine, has the right to be there, or you're happy that he should come. So if the dog bites the pants of the mailman and rips them, that might be different because then you knew he was coming and that's something else. But in a case where the person had no right to be there, the halacha is that anything that happens would make him putter. Now, that's first and foremost. Then he wanted to say that the poles themselves were not dangerous. In other words, they want to say that in this case, the guy loosening the poles anyway wasn't creating this psychonic, because the poles were for laundry, and he could hang out the laundry on the poles even the way they were, and anyway, he could choose not to hang out his laundry, so it was clearly, it's not inherently dangerous. That danger is only going to be for someone who's trying to break into the house. In other words, if someone's going to try to break into the house in that manner, so then those poles are dangerous. So therefore, the psak was that the guy had the right to do it in the first place, and even had he not had the right to do it, he would not have to compensate.
Why not so,
the I'm sorry?
Yeah. So you're saying if you hear someone breaking into your house on Shabbos,
yes,
you can call 911?
Yes. Yes, because of the fact that you never know. You never know. If you're home and they're there, The person does not know what's going to happen. And yes.
Why not just remove the pole?
Why not? Yeah. No. The point was that he wanted to catch him. He wanted this to happen. No, he clearly got enjoyment from this. That he got even. You know, like the old expression that we have: "Don't get mad, get even." Right. So that's exactly what he did. But this fellow, who knows what happened to him, fell to the ground. But nevertheless, the stock was that would be mutter. But I'm just saying, ultimately the reason why it was considered mutter l'chatchila, that he could do such a thing, was because it was not inherently dangerous. In other words, that doesn't pose a harm. None of his children are going to be injured by the loose laundry pole. It's only going to be a harm to someone trying to break in. But to have a wild dog or an attack dog or something like that in the house, or a loaded gun, is a shaila. I'm not saying that you can't do it. You have to know that a gun could be, if it's kept under great guard, it's different. But it seems from the Shulchan Aruch that that alone wouldn't be enough, because there's always the chance that one time you'll be careless. I'm sure that in the tragic stories that you hear in the news, your gun, probably the person was careful, but one time they will lapse, and they, who knows. So I'm just saying, it's a question. I'm not taking a stand on this, because it has to be researched further. But if one looks in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, this is the shadow. Okay. Yes.
People keep kitchen knives and yard tools.
Yes.
Things which are potentially could be used.
Yeah, right, but I guess that's because a knife is used for cutting food and so forth, food preparations. So it's not going to be a weapon, but a guard draw. Now, that otherwise you wouldn't be able to live. You know, you have to be able to cut your food and so forth. But a guard draw or something like that is something else. Okay, now a different shiloh which came up is just on this topic, and we'll move to the next topic in a moment. A different question came up by somebody who was being attacked, suffering losses not from a person but from animals. In other words, what happens if you have, this could happen, you have stray dogs come in to a person's backyard. I had myself recently an issue for a while and my children were frightened to go outside because they were in the back of my house. There was this stray dog in the neighborhood. So the question is, could a person put out poison? Could a person put out poison in such a situation and let the dog, you know, prepare a nice meal for the dog, and that'll be the end of your problem? Okay, so are you allowed to do that? So this is a question which also comes up in the poskim that is discussed in the Tshuva Svarim. Chavis Yor and others discussed the shiloh of a person who was he had the produce. He used to sell beans, different items, and there were one of his neighbors had birds. And the birds were coming flying into his food display and eating causing him a loss. So he eventually got tired of it. So he decided that the next time a bird comes, he's going to kill the bird. So is that permitted or not? So the psak was given by the Chavis Yor. It's also found in Marsham, other tshuvas, that in such a situation you're really not allowed to do that, because what the person should do would be to inform the owner and tell the owner, listen, you're causing me a loss, and then you have the right to take him to Beis Din and say, pay me for the loss. See, that would be a situation where there's no real loss. It's not a peseda, because of the fact that you could always recoup the money if you keep track of how much you lost. So you'll say, but we weren't, that the halacha is like Rav Nachman, that even if there is no loss, even if there's not a loss, he's still allowed to take the warranty on hand. But in this case, the feeling was that there's no reason to do that. Just tell the owner. You can't just go ahead and say that this is annoying me, and therefore I'm going to just I'll kill the bird. Tell the owner. You have to keep call him up. Tell him, listen here, your bird is causing me problems. It's causing me a loss. I'd like you to take care of it. And if not, I'm going to take you to court and sue you for the damages. And that should put an end to it. Now, if it's a wild dog, which is a danger, so then the halacha would be that you can do whatever you wanted, because anyway, that's a direct danger, and you can't necessarily wait and so forth, but it's just the fact that you see annoying nuisances. You know, you see, you know, the person who lets their dog run and doesn't go with them, and the dog runs in the street, and all the women and children, and sometimes even the men, are terrified of such a situation and afraid to say, well, that's it, the next time I'm driving, I'm going to take care of that dog once and for all. You're not really allowed to do that, because if the dog has an owner, as much as it's wrong for the person to allow that to happen, but you have to tell the owner that this is your dog, and you are obligated, I'll be to take care of it. And if the person not going to take care of it, you can call the police. But to go ahead and just take the law into your own hands in a situation like that, the post himself was not correct, because the fact of the matter is that there's another way to deal with the problem, and the law, the entitlement for a person to take the law into his own hands is only in a case where that's the law. And generally speaking, the halacha is going to be that if there's another way, you can't just go and you know, randomly damage things and destroy things just because you're upset. It's a very natural feeling that a person gets. I'm very angry about this. This is rude. It's wrong of the person to do this, right? The person lets his kid play the drums at 1 o'clock in the morning, my next door neighbor, and it wakes me up, so I'm going to send them a little message with a rock flying through the window, right? So that type of thing, those are, you know, those are not tactics that are mutter according to the halacha, right? That's not good, even though they're commonly done, but that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it right. It has to be, if this, you can take the law into your own hands if it's the law, but if it's not the law, so then you can't do such a thing. Okay, now, what about in areas of business? So in areas of business, how would we view a situation? Let's say you have a dishonest worker. If you have a dishonest worker and you want to go ahead and you know that this person is stealing, so you're going to do things to that person, other types of things to sort of get back. You know, I'm not going to treat him properly because I know he's dishonest. I don't have to treat him correctly. So we find very fascinating Gemara in Masechet Brachos. This is found on the second side of the second sheet. On the first side of the second sheet, that it says as follows. Gemara relates the story that Rav Huna, the last line before the lines get wide, okay, it's the top citation on the second sheet. It says, Rav Huna pekifulei arba mea dani dechamra. The Gemara says that Rav Huna, one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, and the great scholars, so he suffered one time a tremendous loss, that he apparently he sold wine, or he had a lot of wine, and 400 barrels of his wine turned sour. 400 barrels of his wine turned sour. This is the Gemara in the beginning of the Sefer Brachos. So it says, Ola Gadei Rabbi Yehuda Achar Esau Chassidu Rabbanan. So the people heard about this enormous financial loss, and they said to him, skipping the line, they Vamrulei La'ayin Mar B'Milei. They said, you know, you should really check through your actions, because this is obviously a divine punishment, and it just didn't happen for no reason. And therefore, you should check into what you're doing to see if maybe something is inappropriate. So the Gemara says, "Amalei mi'chashidna b'nayfus." Rav Huna said, "Why, you suspect that I'm a dishonest person?" So Amalei mi'chashdi kutshabrichu da'avid dinas v'lo dinah. He said, "Well, the other choice is that you're suspecting God of not being error, so to speak. Because if this happened to you, there must be a reason." So you're saying, well, the Rav Huna said, can't be, I'm not such an honest person. I said, well, then why would this have happened? So the Gemara says that he, in fact, checked into his... So Rav Huna took this to heart. So they put out the word, if anyone is aware of any dishonest deed that I may have done, please let me know. So the Gemara says, Amrulei hachi shmielon, loyav mar shavisha la'arise. Says the Gemara that somebody came forth and said, I heard a rumor. The rumor is that you have a sharecropper. A sharecropper means that you own a piece of land and you hire someone to work the field, and you made an arrangement with him that he gets a percentage, and he gets to keep most of the produce. He gives you a certain percentage. So the halacha is that when it comes to a vineyard, if a person has a vineyard, so then when you settle with the sharecropper, you have to give him obviously a percentage of the profit, the percentage of the wine, and you also have to give him a percentage of the vines. The vines themselves, you have to give as well. You can't. It's not good enough to just give him wine. You have to also give him some of the vines. So the Gemara says that they told Rav Huna that we heard a rumor that you had a worker and you paid him when it came time to pay and you gave him the wine, but you didn't give him the vine. So the Gemara says, I'm a loser. Rav Huna said, Nika Shavit Limidi Minei, Hakanavoy Kule. So Rav Huna said, I should give him the vine? You know what happened? I used to give him the vines. And you know what happened? He used to steal, he took much more than he was entitled to. He was entitled, let's say, to 60%. Okay, 70% because he worked the field. So, but he was taking much more than he was entitled to. So therefore I decided that from now on, I'm not going to give him vines anymore. Because he's just, I know in the past, he stole from me. So if in the past he stole from me, I'm going to withhold now money from him. So says the Gemara that they, Amulei, that, Amulei, Hainu Dami, Inshi, Basa, Ganva, Ganova, the time of time. Says the Gemara that this is what people say. There's an expression to the effect that, you know, if you're involved with a crook, so you become a little bit of a criminal yourself. You become a little bit crooked yourself. Rashi says, "Hagonev min haganav afu toim tam ganeva." In other words, to go ahead and try to settle a score with a ganav often results in the person who's trying to settle the score being a ganav. Meaning, the way the Poskim understand this is brought in the halacha that if a person is stealing from you, you can't take other measures against him. You have to, but rather you have to go and settle it straight up. In other words, he's stealing money, so fine, so take him to court and deal with that. But the fact that he's being dishonest with you does not allow you to be dishonest with him. Right. If a person, to take an example, if a person is works for an employee and feels he's not being treated properly, he's not paying me enough. I work so hard for this guy; he never shows me any appreciation. Right? He pays me at a very low rate. So you know what I'm going to do? He doesn't know, so I'm going to leave early. That's all. I'm going to go home early from the job, and I'll settle it that way. I really, he should be paying me much more than what he's paying me. So I'll make a judgment that the amount of money that he owes me entitles me to leave 20 minutes early from the job every day, and it just serves him right. So that's again the type of thing that a person would consider doing. A person would consider that, you know, that's a way of getting even. So the post can say it's brought in the Rishon and Mordechai based on this Gemara in the Sefer Bava Kamma. The Mordechai says, from this we learn that you're not allowed to do such a thing. But rather, if you have a dispute with somebody, you have to settle that dispute with them straight up. You have to settle that dispute with them straight up. If a person checks into a hotel on vacation and feels that he wasn't given the room he was entitled to, and you try, usually they'll try to accommodate, but let's say you went to this particular place and they were, you know, they didn't show any mercy, so you decide, you know what, why should I fight with them? I'll just take the towels home, right? That should even it out, or I'll take the TV, right? There's good case for that. But, I'll take that home, and that'll be the end of it. And that's it. We got even. So this is something that a person is not allowed to do. That's not called taking the law into your own hands, because what's needed in that case is whatever the dispute is, you have to take it up. So the person you feel is not treating you properly, so take him to the defendant, take him to a court, and try to get a judgment on that. But to go ahead and say, because you're doing this, I'm going to do that, because you're doing this, I'm going to do that, is not correct. Yes.
If somebody steals an item from you,
yes,
you have the right to steal it back.
Okay. Yes. So the answer is good. So that is called correctly taking the law into your own hands. If a person steals it now, so what I'm saying until now is that to go ahead and try to take something else is not right. But you have the right to recoup your loss, and even if it means taking it back. So clearly, again, the law of language should never happen to anyone. If a person is being mugged, so the victim has the right to fight back, and whatever injury he causes the mugger, that no problem. He's not responsible for that. He has the right to take it back. If the guy grabs his wallet, he can chase after him and grab his wallet back. He doesn't have to wait to go to Beis Din for that. That's obvious that a person is allowed to do that. Okay? There is a shiloh in the Gemara. If somebody, now, if you see somebody has, it happened here in the neighborhood, that somebody had the child's bike was stolen and they went to the next door neighbor and saw that that bike was in the next door neighbor's living room. So now the question is, so what do you do about it? So a shiloh which comes up in the halacha is, are you allowed to break into that person's house to steal it back? Mm-hmm. That is the shiloh. So in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is on this page, the Gemara says that the Gemara, if you look on the sheet one, the first side, so on the bottom of the page, there's a statement attributed, a controversial statement attributed to Ben Bagbag, one of the Tanoim, that it says, Ben Bagbag Omer, Al Tikonis L'chot L'chaverach L'itol Esholchot Shalol Bershut, that you're not allowed to break into somebody's property to steal something back that has been stolen from you, Shema Tiro of Kaganis, because then you're acting like a Ganif as well. Now this statement is controversial because of the fact that the Gemara ends up saying that the Gemara used this as a question on Rav Nachman. So the Gemara ended up saying that on Rav Yehuda, because here's the case of a loss. So the Gemara ended up saying that this is not the halacha. The fact is, this is not found in the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch, but it's highly debatable why that is. That's a big source of discussion, many shuvas, whether in fact this is halacha or not. So, but that only pertains to breaking in. But if you don't have to break in, if you happen to see in the person's backyard something that they stole from you, so then you have the right to just walk into the backyard and take it back. That a person is allowed to do. That is no question. But the shiloh would be if it involves some sort of criminal activity of my own to go and get it back. I have to break into their house. But still, that's already, I'm not clear what the halacha is. This is the Rav Moshe Feinstein, a very long tshuva on this topic, and others as well. Yeah, that's right.
Somebody stole a significant amount of money from you, and not
only
to give it back to you, but the one
who
gave you the loan.
Are
you able to take that money alone and the thought to
have money to
repay it?
Okay, so that's a good question. In other words, so that, now you came up with a trick that you're going to ask the person for a loan, and you know, as if to make it like you're not aware of the fact they stole the money, you ask them for a loan, and then you're not going to pay them back either. So I can't say with confidence, I believe that in that type of situation, that would be mutter, I believe, because the fact is I'm just taking back, but I just would like to make clear a point which is mentioned in the Rambam. I'm going to skip some of these Maimonides because of the interest of saving time, but the whole idea that you can take the law into your own hands is only if it's the law, meaning that you would have to be able to prove in a Beis Din that this is yours. So if you could prove that he stole the money from you, so then I believe you'd be allowed to do that. But if it's just your word against his word and you went to Beis Din and you would not win the case, then you can't, because that's called, let's put it this way, then I'm not sure that you can. I don't think that you can. In other words, the idea that you could be oven, the Don Dino and Ashe is only in a scenario where you know where this is all legal. Now this similar question comes up with seizing assets of a person. Seizing assets of a person to now there is an Isser in the Torah, which is brought to the Marma Messiah, that says that when it comes to taking a mashkan, taking a collateral, so the halacha is that a mashkan against the loan can only be taken under either the borrower gives it willingly, or it has to be done through a Beis Din. But a person cannot go ahead and say, well, this guy owes me money and I'm getting nervous, so I'm going to start, taking stuff from him and hold it just in case he doesn't pay me back. If, in fact, he stole money from you, so then that's your case. In other words, that he stole it already. It's not that he borrowed it and you're worried. If he borrowed it and you're worried, then the halacha really is that you can't do that. If you look here on the first sheet, at the very end of the quote from the Shulchan Aruch, it says that as much as a person is allowed to take the warrant to his own hands, he says, "Mikom malchum ein lo reshus l'mashkino b'chovo," but you do not have the right to take collateral against the loan. Now, a person can't do that unless it's either given willingly or unless it's done under the jurisdiction of the Bezdin. So that you could not do. But if you know that somebody, but what about a common situation where you know somebody is in great financial distress, and it could be that there's going to be a bankruptcy type of proceeding that's coming up, and you want to go ahead and beat the rush, so you're going to seize some of the assets. This is a question, I'm not going to get involved, this is a difficult question which comes up, unfortunately comes up. This is a real shiloh, whether a person is allowed to do that. Okay, yeah, sorry.
The other manufacturer is just the rush.
What's that? Say
that. Person thinks that the law is always in the
right. That's why you can only do it if you're convinced that you would win in the court. If you're not going to win in the court, no, that you're right. You're right. Then that'll be the Wild West, and you wouldn't be able to walk out in the street. That's what the post can say. Well, Shach to Kyle Goldberry, it would be impossible to live. You wouldn't be able to live to walk in the street, because anybody that had any argument or any claim or any dispute would right away come after you and start grabbing things out of your hand, and it would be unlivable. So therefore, the halacha is that you have to know. So you say everybody thinks they're right, okay? So he has to maybe you should call her up and discuss with him and find out, am I right? When it comes to monetary matters, there are two things that a person has to take into consideration. Number one is that it brings out the strongest human emotion. In other words, everybody is convinced that they're right in all these situations, and because of the very big negia, very, very big negia, the famous statement that that is attributed to many gedolim, they say about the Chassam Sofer and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, other people who said that they were always amazed that you can have a butcher in the town who comes with a shaila that maybe the animal that he has is a trefer, that maybe there was something that's wrong with the animal and it can't be considered kosher, and sometimes they would get a sock from the rub that you're right, you can't, it's usher. And it's a big loss, and they take it and they accept it. And yet, when it comes to a dispute between a person and another person of financial dealing, even the most minimal amount of money results in a tremendous machlokas. And many Rabbanim, from the Gedolei Rabbanim, pointed this out. They said, it's an amazing thing. The same guy, 2 weeks ago, came to me with an animal. I told him it was a trefa, and all the meat is lost, and he can only, whatever, maybe sell to a guy, but basically, he lost, and the fellow swallowed hard and walked away and accepted it. But when it comes, then he got into a fight with his next door neighbor over $20, and now they're each slandering each other all over town. So how do you explain that? So they say, the answer that they gave was, because when it's a question of a binonim or makom, is my animal kosher or treif, so the person realizes it's not in my hands. It's not in my hands, then I can do it. It's a halacha. Either I'm right or I'm wrong. I mean, either it's kosher or it's not. So the rav said it's not. So as much as it's painful to me, but I can accept that. But when it comes to a dispute with another person, so then I feel, even the smallest amount of money, I feel that I'm being violated, because I'm convinced that I'm right. So I'm convinced that I'm right. I'll never be convinced that my animal is not a trefa, because I don't know that I love it so well. So therefore, if a rabbi will tell me, then I'll accept it. But when it comes to monetary matters, everyone is a big posse, right? Because as we know, that's the human nature. You think of every svara. A person will think of every possible argument. This is well known, that people who even have become, who are ignorant of the laws of the Gemara, when they're standing in a court, they're standing in a basin, can be mechadish, the greatest kedushin. Can be mechadish, the greatest kedushin. And in fact, there's a story, I'll end with this, there's a story they say over about the shach, from the greatest poskim that we had in the 17th century, wrote commentary on parts of Shulchan Aruch, Yerideh, Rosh Mishpat. So they say over that the shach was traveling in a certain town, and he got into a certain dispute, with a monetary dispute with somebody else in the town. So he went to the Rav, and in those days they didn't have the mass media like you have today, so you could have a Gadol Hadar, and nobody in a different city knew who he was. They didn't see his picture, so nobody knew this is the Shah, this is the great rabbi of our time. He was in this town, and he didn't, he didn't promote himself, so they went to the local Rav, and for a Din Torah. So the person who he was disputing presented his case in a very simple way. And then the Shach, being very knowledgeable in halacha, presented a very sophisticated argument why he was right. So the Rav listened to this, and he sits there thinking, and he said, I'll tell you the truth. He says, he turns to the Shach and he says, I hear very well what you're saying, and the truth of the matter is, I used to think that that argument was correct. But recently, somebody published a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called Sifsei Kohen, a.k.a. Shach, okay? And I got my hand on that commentary, and I see there that he refutes all of your arguments and says that the law is, in fact, like the other person. So based on that, I have to caution against you. So they say over, an amazing story, they say over that the Shach said, he said, look at that, what a negiah to do when it comes to a monetary dispute, what to do to a person. He said, this is my own Torah, he brought his own Kedushin, what caused him to lose the case. So he said, so if he knew my Kedushin, why didn't I know my Kedushin? The answer is, because in this case, it was my money. It was my money involved. So when it's my money involved, I think of every slur, every logic, every possible reason, and in fact, I wasn't right. So this is something that a person has to take to heart. So when you're getting involved in these types of situations, you know, to protect yourself from a ganav, which was the first part of the discussion, those laws are much easier. It's much more concrete. When a person is involved in a monetary dispute with somebody else and feels that I'm right and therefore I'm going to grab something from him or I'm going to take something from him, it's really advisable to speak to a knowledgeable halakhic person who's neutral. Because it's very easy that a person could be misled and end up saying the wrong thing based on his own rationalization. These are some of the halachas that come up in this topic. As I say, I said at the outset, it's way too vast to try to cover all the areas here. And a lot of these questions, especially when it comes to monetary disputes, are very complicated. You know, to seize someone's assets in certain cases could be mutter. But you have to know. You have to know what's right to do, what's not right to do. And this is not such a simple thing. When it comes to self-defense, that the laws are easier to understand and to comprehend. But a person just has to remember, basically, as a rule of thumb, that if you're going to take the law into your own hands, first of all, you have to make sure it's the law. That's number one. You have to make sure that you're right. And this is a halacha that would be in Besdin, such a halacha. And B, aside from that, knowing that a person's right, you also, which really ties into A, is that you have to know that there's no other recourse. If there's another recourse, then you can't do it. If a person was attempted to mug Reuven, and Reuven has a gun in his pocket, but he managed to scare off the mugger, and the mugger is running away, and then Reuven pulls out a gun and shoots him, that is not allowed. I don't believe it's allowed in American law. That was a famous case years ago in New York in the subway situation. People remember the case Bernard Goetz. You remember back in the day, right? So that situation is not mutter in the American law, and it's also not mutter in halacha because of the fact that what you have to kill him for, he's running away. So if he's running away, if you're upset at him, just because you're angry at a person does not entitle you to do whatever you want. So you have to know that in certain situations, if it's the halacha, it's the halacha. If there's a way to deal with it another way, if you can minimize the damage, if you can minimize the damage, somebody's damaging you, and you want them to stop it. So, you know, if somebody leaves on the, again, here in Miami, people are much more chilled out, but up north, you know, somebody leaves something by accident on the trunk of your car, somebody was unpacking their groceries, and they put something on the trunk of your car, and it's, jars, and you kind of teach them a lesson. You get in the car, turn on the ignition, step on the gas, and the car shoots forward, and the bag smashes to the ground, and all the jars break. Who says you're allowed to do that? You know, they say, well, I'll teach them a lesson. Teaching them a lesson is only allowed if it's halacha. So what you should do in such a person, you have the right to be upset at them, but you take the bag off and put it down. You can't just cause someone damage because you're angry. You have to know what the rights are. There are often times that a person has the rights, but you have to know when those times are and act accordingly.